The yellow flag has been shown. The red flag is being taken away. The lights will go to red. For the last time this season, the lights change.
Away they go. Good start from Danny Pedrosa when we never said stop.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 309 for Wednesday, the 7th of March, 2012. My name is Jim Race. I am here in what's now sunny California, but it was snowy yesterday. Across the pond with me is Martin Darlington in the North of Wales. How are you doing, Martin?
Yeah, I'm good. It's dark here because it's 10 past 10 at night.
Yeah, it's...
Say I'm in the North Wales? This is catching on now.
I know.
People are starting to say on Twitter, they're saying, oh, I'm hoping to get across to the Europe this year. And I'm thinking, I know where they've got that from.
What have I done?
Yes.
What have I done? Hold on for just a moment, please. There we go. Because the show really isn't official until that sound comes across.
I have no answer this week.
It's near past your bedtime, sir.
It's not far off, and I've got lots of flying to do tomorrow.
Yep, I was Martin and I before the show. We were talking about the various branches of service, and it was a funny conversation. You flew with once again, reiterate for the fans out there.
I flew with the Army.
Okay.
And we tolerate the Navy, and we don't tolerate the Royal Air Force because they're just a shower. Bunch of garage mechanics just want to fly around dropping bombs on things that they generally miss.
Oh.
8,000 miles they flew to the Falklands, two Vulcans, amazing feat. Logistical, you know, difficult. They found the Falklands, which for the RAF is impressive, and then missed the runway that they were trying to bomb. So, oh, well.
You know, there has to be a couple of RAF pilots out there that are going to write in and go, fuck you, Martin.
I tell you what, Jim, after the recent blooming defense cuts, there are only a couple of RAF pilots left, I think.
There may be
some of them are all right. Well, that's the rumor. I don't believe it myself, but.
You've heard stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do we got going on this week? We've got, it's cool. I'm kind of stoked, and it actually made this show relatively easy. We got a bit of news we're going to talk about from MotoGP, but you guys who seem to really enjoy, and we totally appreciated the effort put in by Phil Hall down at Phillip Island. We've got six more interviews from Phillip Island. Yes, we saved some for the second week, and we know that we've got, you know, kind of a quiet week going on. There's a lot of testing and things going on. Both in MotoGP World, or actually not so much World Superbike, but MotoGP BSB is hot on the trail. AMA is coming up pretty soon. But the interviews in store, Roger Gunn of Team Yellow Bike, that would be the team that hosted Ed Hazer when he went down there, and that interview is just awesome. Troy Corser, Sheridan Morais out of South Africa, Lucas Paycheck out of Czechoslovakia, Brock Parks, an Australian, as well as Mark Aitchison, another Aussie. So it's going to be a long show, which means you and I, Martin, need to keep ourselves abbreviated.
Keep it tight. Keep it rolling. Yep.
Yep. What do we want to talk about? You want to roll into the MotoGP stuff we've got going on?
Yeah, sure. Some interesting stuff came out. There was reports or rumors abounded that Yamaha had got themselves a what's become known as the seamless shift gearbox, which obviously Honda used to such devastating effect last year. And Wilco Zeelenberg, Jorge Lorenzo's crew chief, has said, no. We had a few new gearbox parts. We were attempting to make smoother gearbox transitions, but we don't have access to a seamless shift gearbox, so that's completely denied. And I thought, yeah, uh-huh. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, no, we don't have access to it. And that verbiage just kind of cracked me up. I'm like, all right, maybe they figured it out. And there's no denying that the concept and technology is not, you know, a black art. I mean, these guys know how to do this. So it could be very interesting and kind of possibly negate. And, you know, who knows? The Honda horsepower that's been showing itself during the test so far.
Well, I also wondered if it's like, it's like Rossi saying, no, we're not going to put a Delta box frame into the Ducati, yeah. Because that's a, that's a patent or a trademarked Yamaha piece of, you know, piece of equipment. So wonder if he's sort of saying, no, we haven't got a seamless shift gearbox. We've got a smooth shift gearbox, which is what Yamaha are going to call it, which is effectively the same thing by a different name. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. And also, and I kind of understand this, Yamaha and Honda factory teams have been quite vocal about the very late notice increase in the minimum weight for MotoGP bikes from 153 to 157 kilograms. Don't sound a lot, 4 kilograms, but it's got to make a difference. And they kind of spent all this R&D time, effort and money to make the best bike they can for 153, and suddenly they're told, ah, you can chuck an extra 4 kilograms on if you want. It was too late. They developed it.
Well, you know, let me pull you back a little bit, because if you remember in the interview that we had with Carlos Checa last week, the one that Phil did, and which was very cool, and something that if you guys haven't listened to that up tight and close, Carlos delineated exactly where the weight went, that extra 6 kilos that they had to carry on their bike as a quote unquote penalty from last year. So, and it's very simple things. It's not like you're putting a lump of lead in one spot. You move it around the bike. You can change it all the time. You can put it anywhere you want. You know, they switched from a titanium to a steel exhaust system. They swapped out the titanium bolts for steel, and they can still move stuff all over the place. The front fork is a little bit heavier, using a heavier spring. It's crazy because it's not, in my mind, Martin, that kind of change is not that huge of a penalty. Yes, Honda and Yamaha are a little pissed off about it because they have to make changes, and frankly, it costs them money. But it's not as big a deal as a lot of people might make it out to be.
But proportionally, it doesn't look that big. But if you don't get the balance right, what on earth was that?
Skype had a shit.
I was going to say, it was like the old crossed lines you used to get on the old manual telephone exchanges.
To be honest, Mark Miller just came online on Skype, and whenever he comes on, things tend to go to chaos.
There you go. So they're a bit miffed. Other news, Andrea Dovizioso, he expressed concern about tyre wear, saying the softer Bridgestone options are just going to get chewed. And that concern was sort of mirrored by Jorge Lorenzo, but with a more positive spin, where he said he believes tyre management will be a major key this season to success.
Right.
And I'd put in Jorge Lorenzo, brackets, world champion in waiting. And the reason I'm suddenly getting a bit bullish is that for the last few years, the Bridgestone techs have consistently said, without any competition, Lorenzo is the best tyre preserver in the paddock. And I thought, ooh, this could be promising.
You do realize you're setting yourself up for a fall.
Oh, yeah, of course. But you've got to stick it out there. And then at the end of the season, hope that no one remembered. Don't forget, I've been living in Britain. I've been reading British newspapers. That's how they operate. Make a wild prediction.
I need to point out to you that you are no longer a private personality.
No, that's true.
What you say is going to be taken as a grain of salt.
It certainly needs to be taken with a grain of salt.
Well, yeah. Carry on.
The other thing about Jorge, of course, is he passed his motorcycle test last week. So he is now road legal. And as Sofa Racer, at Sofa Racer on Twitter, he said, I wonder if he'll do any burnouts on the lights. He said, oh, no, without traction control, he'd probably stall it. And I thought, oh, there's a Rossi fan getting his hits in early.
Did I ever tell you that in 30, 40-plus years of road riding, I was never road legal?
You're joking. You never had a license?
Never had a license.
Then Officer Ponciarello's going to be knocking on your door shortly.
You would not believe how many incidents that I got out of with my Charmin wit. That was part of my impetus to go racing. I'm like, well, shit, you know, I really didn't want to go down and take the riding test. And I'm a lazy bastard. That's part of my nature. And so at this point now, and I don't have a bike at the current time, I kind of wear it as a badge of courage and stupidity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was a good rider, mind you. I was, you know, one of the best, but I never had it. And I stayed out of trouble many, many times. I'll give you a little story, and the fans out there too. In 1987 or 88, somebody had brought a YSR 50 painted in the Lucky Strike Suzuki colors. To Laguna Seca, to the parking lot. And this is, I think it was probably 87, because this is back when they had the old turn two. They didn't have the old infield. And somebody handed it to me at the end of Sunday, like 5 o'clock on Sunday, which means that I probably had a couple of beverages in me. And we were in the parking lot on the inside of turn two. And they said, yeah, go tire it around. So I'm going out. It's a YSR 50, mind you, a tiny little bike, and I'm 6'2", and so, you know, way oversized. And I got pulled over because it was a two-stroke and it was loud, and got issued a ticket, which turned into a complete nightmare in the end, because it was actually issued by the MPs of Fort Ord, who were running security for Laguna Seca at that time.
MPs as in military police?
Yes.
Oh, goodness.
That put a bit of a scar on my driving / riding career. And that was kind of my point of going, you know what? Screw it. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to keep riding. I'm going to keep my nose as clean as possible. And those times when I need to, I might just run. anyway.
Did you ever have to?
Once or twice.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Probably best less said about that, the better.
Let's get back to the show.
Valentino Rossi, after the second Sepang test, accepted that whilst the Ducati team had made progress, they failed to take as many steps as the other teams. So, although compared to where they'd been in test one, they improved, they've actually dropped back in the standings, and he was quite disappointed. So it does look like another tough season start, but obviously it's a long way to go. They may well make some breakthroughs. And for the despairing Rossi bandwagon riders, can I get away with that, as I've put here? At least there's a lot more room for improvement than the other top teams, eh? So it remains to be seen. I don't know. I mean, Nicky seemed fairly upbeat with the improvements they'd made, but Valentino didn't.
Well, I think that much like all of the teams, and I saw tweets from Alex Briggs, they're kind of, you know, they're heading back, and they have plans to make further improvements to the chassis and certainly the motor and obviously the electronics. And I have a feeling they'll come out with a pretty good package for Qatar. Jerez first, you know, race zero. Qatar should be, and will be, of course, the final decision point. And that's what we have to look forward to. Jerez is what, 2 weeks off now, something like that?
No, Qatar first is April the 8th, so we're still three.
Right, but we've
got... Oh, sorry, Jerez test.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, of course, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, no, Jerez test is... Yeah, because they then test at Qatar the week before the race, don't they? So we're looking at, 2 weeks to Jerez, 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Which means that I and you, from what you've told me pre-show, are going to get busy with some more interviews, because we're going to exhaust the ones we got from Phil this week and have to have something to fill in our time for next week's show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Further news, MotoGP.com reporting that several CR teams are testing Thursday and Friday of this week, so it's probably happened by the time the listeners are listening to this. And the team's confirmed thus far for the test a Power Electronic Aspar with Randy DePugno and Alethis Spargaro, Speedmaster with Mattia Bassini and Paul Bird with James Ellison, plus the IOTA Racing Project with Danilo Petrucci. Aventia Racing's Ivan Silver and Yoni Hernandez, they hope will make it there, although it sounds a little bit less certain for them. But certainly, David Emmett on MotoMatters.com was saying today that from the Sepang test, only Silver and Hernandez would have been in a race at that difference of pace. Only they would have been lapped and only just lapped. Whereas Randy DePugno was, what, 0.1, 0.2 behind Hector Barber on a pretty decent satellite bike. So, you know, CRT is improving already quite markedly.
Well, we got a lot of great feedback from the CRT, and I apologize, I forget the gentleman's name, you probably remember it, from the CRT / history thing that we did, that email.
Yeah. John Crawford.
John Crawford. And John, thank you again for that. We got a bunch of great feedback on that. People really appreciated us pointing out those facts because what we're looking at now, it looks like some of the CRTs are going to be more competitive than we thought. And it, obviously, as we said before, it's something we have to live with. But I think it's pretty cool. You know, Colin in the interview last week said they were up to 83-84%, and that was a 19% jump over what he had earlier in the testing season. So I think there's some promise there.
I've got to say, I love the fact he was so precise. You know, you said to him you felt you were at 60% last time, and he said, yeah, we're 83, 84, and I thought, that's really scientific.
Yep. Well, I mean, it, like you said, he's got 20, 21 years in development, and he knows. He knows. He's got, you know, he's got an eye for this stuff. And I thought the other thing that was really cool in that interview was that he said, and I don't know if he got in trouble for this, we may or may not have, but he's like, I know what we did with Yamaha, and we did this and this and this, and I'm not a computer guy, I can't plug the numbers in, but here's what we did with the butterflies for the throttle body, and he said they immediately dropped 2 seconds on the track. So that is cool because he said they were ready to pack their shit up and go home, and he didn't have to. So really, really cool.
Yeah, and I just think really quite positive and hopeful. And I thought you and Jules hit the nail on the head when you were talking the other week about when Moto2 was first mooted, and, you know, and I think everyone was like, oh, no, come on, you can't get rid of two strokes. And then look at it now. It's one of our favorite series.
Yep.
And on that front, really, really positive news that Repsol Media Service press release reinforced earlier rumours that Marc Marquez has been testing his Moto2 bike at the Alcaraz circuit in Spain. He only did a few laps, but he's been given the all clear by the docs, and he said, yep, it's all working. Good. So thank you to David Emmett again at MotoMatters.com for putting that up so I could steal it and pretend that we'd found it out on our own.
Well, did you not see it when I forwarded you the email like 2 seconds after I got it?
I probably skim read that one. It's been a busy weekend.
you have been a busy boy. You guys are still trying and working very, very hard to get yourself a new Hilo.
We are indeed, yeah. We had a massive launch last week. All three Welsh helicopters came together for the second year running.
Came together, so to speak. That isn't actually the perfect term for a non-pilot.
No. But, I mean, the cost of it is frightening. We need to raise an extra 600,000 a year. So in Wales, with a population of less than 3 million in the whole country, we need to raise 6 million a year to keep three new generation aircraft going. We've got two. North and South have already got new generation. We're hoping to get one for ours because our little old Bolko's 20 years plus old, and it's you know, it can do the job, just not as well as the new ones by any degree.
Cool. So, well, those of you out there that live in that region, Wales Air Ambulance Service, look it up online. And if you have the opportunity, please donate to their fund. Very, very cool work that you do, Martin.
It's so needed. We don't have much in the way of hospitals in Mid Wales. In fact, we don't have any except for Aberystwyth on the coast. And the roads are winding.
Yep,
is the best way to put it.
And I sent you a bit of good news. We've got a listener and a fan who is putting together for us overseas, it sounds like, some stickers produced locally for you. And
I know.
And on top of that, hopefully he will be able to put together a couple of shirts for you for when you go to Silverstone.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I've got the ones that I had made up last year, but they're a bit they're a little bit naff, yeah. Because they've got follow Motopod Martin on Twitter, yeah. And it's like, yeah, okay. I could do with some official ones.
That was in your best Spiel-Nalding voice?
Spiel-Nalding, indeed. Bless him. I don't think he'll be talking to me at Silverstone.
No. You know, it's funny, he never made a comment about that. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, I'm hoping he didn't know.
No, trust me.
I suspect he did, yes.
I suspect he did. All right, which leads us into World Superbike, which leads us into a swarm of interviews we need to play for you. These are the ones, once again, done for us by Phil Hall of halfofmylife.com. Great friend of the show and an excellent interviewer. So you're going to get last week we ran a whole bunch of the World Superbike content. This week we've got a little bit more of that plus World Super Sports stuff. And Phil, dude, you kicked ass. So a pat on the back to you, virtual, reaching down under to continent. And let's just get these things out of the way. It's going to be about an hour, so maybe more. So enjoy.
No comments, please. This is Phil Hall. This is Phil Hall reporting for Moto Podcast from the World Superbikes at Phillip Island, and I'm speaking to Roger Gunn. Roger, most of our constituency won't recognise your name, but of course they will if we say that you were the guy who brought Ed Hazer and Jimmy Mack out from America to race at the Island Classic. Can you explain what happened there?
Ed and Jimmy offered me lots of money and things like women and alcohol and other substances, and you know, with an offer like that, an invitation, I had to say yes. Ed had been communicating with me via Facebook about how fantastic a rider he was, and had really pumped his tyres up, you know, which I find very unusual for an American, you know, of any, you know, competitor. And you know, so I thought, well, you know, why not? We'll bring him out here and just show him how, you know, fast the old guys with grey beards really go. And I think he went home with his tail between his legs, whipped.
But he would, of course, say that that's to do with the fact that his bike wasn't fast enough.
Oh, we can always complain about that, but, you know, you've got to twist that right wrist.
Ed's still raving about the time that he spent out here, and Jimmy, they just had such a fantastic time.
Yeah, look, it was a fantastic experience for myself, you know, to actually, you know, have Peter Minahan, my mechanic crew chief, to get three bikes going in a fairly short period of time, have them run all weekend without any blemishes, except for the fact that Ed threw one away. And you know, I can tell you, it's taken me ages to get the green leathers off the back of the 1000 where he ran into Jimmy. So, you know, it was a great event. The boys actually surpassed my expectations. Jimmy, you know, I think if we can get Jimmy onto a good bike next year, he's going to do absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I'm telling the Cape Barren geese to stay away because, you know, Ed could be out in the paddocks anywhere, anytime, you know, and heading for one of them.
Now, I know, Roger, that you've made some suggestions already, even before the boys went home, about getting an American team out here for the Island Classic next year.
That's correct. We've had negotiations with Phillip Island, and they're very keen to have America represented over here. we're discussing now what sort of rules we can apply to have some equity in the bikes, because the rules in America are vastly different to what we run here. But I think if we restrict them all to 100 horsepower and 3.5-inch rims, we should be pretty well on the pace.
Yep, well, that sounds pretty fair to me. I mean, you can't give them too much of an advantage, can you?
Well, you know, it'd be fantastic for them to come out of here and actually win the support race. No, I'm sorry, I've got to stop taking the piss so badly. No, look, it'd be fantastic. Because I'll never hear the end of it on Facebook. And Ed, you have to sleep sometime, so I'm going to get a quote in and have it last at least 12 hours before you refute it. Look, Phillip Island's a fantastic place, and you know, I can honestly say, you know, looking at the people that are walking past now, checking out the historic bikes, you know, there's various age groups, lots of girls, you know, and it's sunny, and so they're not wearing many clothes, but you know, that's another thing. But yeah, look, Phillip Island's just a fantastic event, and the more Americans we can get to come out here and have a ride, you know, look, I'll put it on the table, if Kevin Swanson wants to come and ride one of my katanas, he can have a ride.
Well, it is a Suzuki.
I might even let him ride the big engine one.
Roger, thanks for your time, and you know, on a personal note, thanks for the opportunity to spend the time with your team and with the boys when they came out from the States. It was a very great gesture from you to sort of invite me down and annoy the hell out of you, because I know that I did. But you know, it was a terrific time, and great to spend time with the guys. And you know, I can tell you from my point of view, from what the feedback I've got there, they were incredibly grateful for the opportunity.
No, look, thanks, Phil. Look, I've got to say, it was a great learning experience for, you know, some guys that we'd never actually met, and yourself. We'd only communicated via Facebook. As a networking tool, it was fantastic. We had three guys pitting together that you know, had the same passion and same ambitions in respect to motorsport, and you know, everybody had a fantastic time, and the memories we all took home were just awesome. And every time I think of Ed, you know, trying to lead the warm-up lap, you know, it brings a smile to my face. And yeah, the competition between Ed and Jimmy over the whole weekend was absolutely superb to watch. And you know, I hope next year we can bring it on and they can both get out there and have a great time again.
Thank you, Roger Gunn. And that's reporting from Phillip Island, and Roger, of the boss of the yellow bike team, and Ed Hazer and Jimmy Mack, I know, are very, very grateful, and thanks for sparing us your time.
Thanks, Phil. It's been a great time.
Okay, well, it's Phil Hall again reporting from the World Superbike Championships at Phillip Island. Super Sports pre-practice session 2 is just out on the track at the moment, and I'm up in the media centre at the moment, and it's a great pleasure to talk to 2 times World Superbike champion and all-round good guy, Troy Corser. Troy, you're having a good time?
Yeah, it's nice to always come back here to Phillip Island and you know, soak in the sunshine and everything, so no, it's nice to be here.
And you'd have some great memories of this place?
Yeah, mate, I've been racing here. My first race I ever had here was like in 1989, I think, on a 250 production bike, actually. C and D grade meeting when I first started road racing. So, yeah, definitely lots and lots of memories from this place.
Troy, you're retired now, of course, and living the life of a dignified ex-champion, but still heavily involved with the BMW team.
Well, yeah, you know, BMW pretty much brought me on board as like an ambassador for the company. So it basically means I'm still present around the racetrack, motor shows, some presentations, different events that they sponsor and stuff. So quite a wide range of different stuff I'm going to be doing with them. I'm still working quite closely with my own personal sponsors, Alpine Star and Shark and Samco Hoses and a few other companies that I'm working with. So now I've got time to go on, actually spend a bit of time at these events and stuff and help promote the products and not be in so much of a rush.
Tell me, Troy, I've always been fascinated. What's the story with the shark? The crocodile, sorry.
The crocodile? Yeah, it was always something that an animal that I always sort of thought, you know, definitely deserves respect. And, you know, it's sort of, well, it's a quiet animal until it sort of attacks and does what it needs to do. And it's sort of how my style always was. You know, I never looked like I was probably the quickest guy out there, but when it come time to it, you know, we could get the result and surprise everybody.
So, Troy, that leads naturally into my next question, is how has racing changed since you first started racing a superbike?
Well, to be honest, the racing itself hasn't really changed that much, you know, like the approach that you need to have to come to be into a motorcycle racer and at events. Obviously, the speeds and the level of equipment that we have and the technology and personnel that we've got has obviously increased with the time. But at the end of the day, it still comes down to the rider getting the best setup with the bike and the team. But at the end of the day, once the visor's shut, it comes down to yourself. You know, you've built what you've got, and it's up to you to go out there and use what you've got and get a result.
Technology, Troy?
Yeah, technology. Obviously, just the electronic sides of things now on the bike and the telemetry that we can actually now use to assist the rider to actually see what's going on with the machine. You know, in the past, it was all just whatever the rider said. Mechanics just went on what they understood from you and their own knowledge. Where now we can actually, the computer can, it doesn't lie. You know, what the bike is doing, it actually shows exactly what it's doing. That doesn't necessarily mean that we don't listen to the rider and just work on the computer, but it gives the engineers a better understanding of what the rider needs as feel and what it actually looks like on a graph. So it's probably made it a little bit easier in a way, but in a way it's made it more confusing because now there's a lot more variables that we weren't really sure of and inputs that can confuse but also can help.
Does it change from rider to rider the percentage of what you do with the bike depending on what the rider said or what the telemetry said? Does that change from rider to rider? Some riders give better feedback than others?
For sure, yes, depending on your experience, really. Obviously, some riders are out there just riding 100% all the time and trying to do the best they can. Other riders who don't need to push that hard can actually be feeling what the bike's doing. But that just comes with experience, you know. You can't... Everybody is different. So it's difficult to say that that'll work for me, and it's definitely going to work for somebody else. So that's why it's still important. What the rider says, you've got to listen to the rider.
It seems incredible to think that we sort of think of Marco Melandri as an old rider, and yet he's still so young.
Well, like I said, you know, when they get an opportunity, especially the Europeans, Italians, they can start racing at such a young age, especially in the Grand Prix scene. And you know, he's been around for a long time, so people think that they are older. A bit like myself, really, in a way. So... Yeah, it's good that riders can start so young and gain all that experience, and you know, people think that they're old, but they're still only like 30 years old. But you know, that's sort of getting towards an older rider now in superbikes, in racing terms, really. You know, there's only people like myself, Checa, Biaggi, who are at sort of close to the 40 era and are still competing at a high level, just because you've got all these young kids coming in and you know, taking all these chances.
How do you explain Checa and Biaggi being so competitive still at over 40?
It's experience, mate. It's no different than myself. Obviously, you've got to have the equipment and the people around you, but as a rider, it really only comes down to injury that really does slow you down. Like if you're a fast rider, you don't forget how to be fast, whether you be a 40 or 30. But injury is normally the biggest thing, and I think... myself, Max and Checa really have been quite injury free really compared to most other young riders who are out there with broken hips and femurs and stuff. You know, touch wood, you know, that you know, we all got away with you know, pretty minor injuries, and like I said, you can't beat experience, and all of us have pretty much ridden every single motorcycle you can think of, from 125, 250, 600, superbikes, GPs. And you can't beat that, you know. That's why you can jump on a bike, and if you're still up there and you've got the right team around, you can be up there as fast as anybody.
Troy, you're not tempted to drag the old leathers on and go historic racing?
Not at the moment.
A big smile from Troy Corsa here, by the way.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I've been racing pretty much for 20 years, and you know, I've been very fortunate and had good results and stuff. Now, I've got two kids now who are like 8 and 6, and you know, we really haven't even been on a family holiday because it always clashes with school holidays. I'm away testing, or there's a race on, or something, and It's been great. I've loved it. But now, I say, people are saying I've retired. I haven't really retired. I've just took a year off, really. And if that becomes retirement, then I'm retired. But we'll see. Like I said, I'm enjoying time at home with the family and stuff, and growing up with the kids. But you know, at the end of the day, I still like going out there racing bikes too. So we just need to find a good balance.
Last time we talked at your home in Wollongong, and we sat down on the veranda and chatted for a long, long time about racing and where things were going and so forth. And you said that you had almost got to the stage where you regarded Europe as home because you spent so much time there. Is that still the case, or are you sort of getting more of a hankering to sort of put down roots here?
No, you know, Europe's always, I think, going to be home, like a base. You know, my wife's English and my kids are over there doing school. I'm a permanent resident in Monte Carlo. I've been there now for 15 years. So my business, racing business, is in Europe. The day when I'm actually completely away from motorcycles and not around it, then you know, I'd like to think I could come back and end up being back here full time. But as at the moment, I'm enjoying what we're doing. I still find myself quite lucky. I can actually come to Australia, go to Europe, go to America, and see all these places. And I think if I'd move back here and said, right, this is it, I'd miss all that. So I'm still living the dream. Yeah, sure.
Well, I've seen one of the guys this morning. The first race meeting I went to was at Laverton in 1976, in January 76, 36 years ago, when Kenny Blake beat Agostini in the Australian TT. And I sort of walked in the gate here yesterday morning, and I sort of still got the buzz, you know, even now, you know. And it's just something that's becomes part of you, doesn't it?
Definitely. Like I say, it becomes part of your life, you know, really. And to do it, you need it. Allow that to happen, you know. So it's such a good big family feeling, you know, when you've been in it for so long. I feel quite fortunate. I can literally walk into any pit box I want to, and whether they've got engines apart, bikes apart, it really doesn't matter, because I'm not there looking and spying and that. It's just because I know a mechanic that I've worked with maybe 5 years ago or last year, or I've never worked with him, and they just like to say hello to me, and I see him. So, so it's good. Like I said, I've enjoyed it a lot.
Do you need it?
Not really. Like I said, I could stay at home quite easy too, and just watch it on TV. But I enjoy coming and seeing everybody who I've grown up with pretty much over the years, and everyone's changing bikes and teams and stuff. And it's good just to get a bit of an insight on what's still going on, and not have any pressure to worry about it.
The upcoming Australian riders?
To be honest, there's quite a few. Obviously, Allison on the BMW. Obviously, I've been watching him a bit because of the BMW connection there. But Josh Waters, and there's five or six fast Aussie kids at the moment, which it's unfortunate at the moment that the way the racing scene is in Europe, with finance and money and backers and stuff, that the opportunity to actually get out of Australia, come over and get given a chance to have a test on a bike and earn some money in your first years is pretty much gone. You know, like when I first went over, you could do it, but now you've pretty much got to bring some money, you know, get yourself on a bike and prove yourself, and it's just getting harder and harder, because there's a lot more people out there with some money or can got someone behind them to do it. So, and obviously being so far away from where all the action is, it's even harder.
And even if you've proved yourself, like somebody like Anthony West, for example, you still can't get a ride if you haven't got the money.
Sure. Like I said, you know, sometimes it can become wrong nationality, even for advertisement and marketing and stuff, which I always thought was a bit of the case. You know, being Australian, you're not part of the European world culture. Yeah. And whilst you're still fast in that, you've still got to be marketable. They've still got to be able to use you to their maximum. So it definitely is a little bit more difficult than say if you're Spanish and you're at the same speed or level compared to an Aussie guy, I think.
Tyres, Troy?
Tyres?
Yeah, changes?
Well, obviously now that they've got the spec tyre, pretty much, controlled tyre, in a way it's better because, you know, everybody's got the same possibilities and stuff, but not... The tyre doesn't always suit the same bike. Sometimes a Dunlop suited the better than a Michelin or a Pirelli. But now you've basically got to use with what you got and set the bike up around it. So in a way, it's good to take it out another variable. it's made it a little bit more expensive because everyone's got to buy their tyres now, where before everyone was getting given their tyres to win races. So yeah, it's changed a lot.
Troy, you've of course won two world championships on two different bikes, a Ducati and Suzuki. Couldn't really be too much difference, you know, any more different between the two, and yet you adapted well to both bikes, and you sort of won straight out of the box on the Suzuki. So, you know, where does that come from? You know, is that just experience again?
I think so, yeah. Like I said, I've ridden pretty much every, from twins to three cylinders when I rode the Petronas bike, to the fours being the Suzuki and the Yamahas and stuff, V4s when I rode the Honda here in Australia and stuff. So it was just something that I just learnt along the way, and unless you have the opportunity to do that, you're never actually going to learn it. So I feel quite lucky that I had the opportunity to do all that, and I think that's why it sort of made me the racer I am, because I can effectively just jump on a bike and get the best out of it.
Well, that may be so, but I wouldn't use the word lucky. I reckon you make your own luck.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, you know, you're right. You definitely make your own luck with, you know, learning and working with the people around you and learning stuff off them. You know, obviously, us riders, we get all the glory, but all the hard workers, the guys behind us down in the workshops and back at the office and stuff, that unless they're doing their job right, we can be the best rider in the world, and it doesn't show on the track. So I've been pretty fortunate. I've actually worked with a lot of good teams, mechanics, team managers and all that, and had a good relationship with all of them, and never really fell out with any of the teams, which is pretty uncommon, really.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know, I guess it's just my persona with people and the respect that they give me. So,
are you disappointed that Francis Batter's not involved?
I'm disappointed for them, hugely, because, you know, they are super bikes. They were there from the day I got there. They were still involved way back when it was Diesel Jean sponsorship, when I first come down here and watched Raymond Roche and Flapper and all them guys run around here and Mertens, and they were there then. You know, and for them to still be there and me ride for them and stuff, it was a privilege to ride with them guys.
Sure.
And for someone who's given that much to a sport to sort of been pushed a bit to the side because of circumstances is very disappointing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm happy that we had a chance to actually give them a world championship, because the team worked for that many years and never actually won a Superbike world championship.
Yeah.
And to do that with them, and we get on greatly, even when I wasn't riding with them, and even now after I've ridden for them, the friendship and the relationship still is as strong as ever. So I'm sad for them, because they make the paddock, and it's a big hole to fill.
Sure.
So, but you know, there's always going to be another team that comes in and sort of fills in that hole. But you still loosen that personality of people around. You know, Francis and Patricia are unbelievable. You know, they work with the organisers a lot, not just for their own benefit, but for the whole championship benefit.
Is there something that Troy Corser would have liked to have done and didn't get done?
No, I did. I would have liked to have spent a little bit more time in MotoGP, or had a chance to have a go in the MotoGP. Now it's four-stroke. And I had a small touch there on the 500s with Yamaha in 97. Just chasing the dream. You know, after winning the Superbike Championship, every rider's dream is to jump up to the next class. But in saying that, now looking back, if I could have done it all again, I wouldn't have went to GPs. I would have stayed here in Superbikes, and just because I was happy, it's fun, it's relaxing. And to be honest, I had more fun being here than what I did at GPs at any event. So,
funny how many people say that.
Yeah, so, you know, it's... but, like I said, that you learn as you grow older, and like I said, I'm a bit wiser now, and I look back and stuff, so I'm the first one now that... say to all these young riders, don't be in such a hurry to go to GPs. Get yourself in an established super sport or super bike team. Work to a goal. Once you get the goal, then if you're at the top, then try to stay there for as long as you can, really.
My grandma used to say, you can't put an old head on young shoulders.
You can, but it just doesn't go together. So, it just wouldn't work. So, I think the old head will probably want to go to bed while the young body's still out running around partying. So, no, it's been good.
Favourite bike?
If I had to pick one bike that I found was probably the overall easiest bike and I got the most out of, probably would have been the Ducati. Ducati, between the Ducati and Aprilia. Both V-twin engines. When I rode the Aprilia, it was a V-twin, 90 degrees, and I gelled with the bike, and it's just nice, and it works, and obviously the factory's got so much information and knowledge and experience that we learn off each other, and that's why we succeeded so quickly.
Sure.
I think, you know, they've got that racing passion in their blood and stuff, so I think out of all of them, I've enjoyed it with all of them, but as just a bike that you can swing your leg over, go out there and ride around and feel fast, or not even feel fast, feel slow, but be fast and be competitive and get results, it'd be a Ducati for sure, and it still is today. If you watch the bike is still the bike to beat. Although it's probably the oldest and the slowest that they say, it's still the bike to jump on and actually go out there and do a lap.
Has Troy Corsa got any nice bikes tucked away in the garage at home?
No, mate, I didn't bother keeping any of them, so no.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you again, Troy. You know, and it's been great to see fabulous career and continuing on doing something that's different but still keeps you attached to the sport. And I can see, you know, just looking at your face, you know, the passion is still there. I don't think it'll ever go away.
No, definitely not. You know, so it becomes part of your life. And like I said, I've been riding bikes because my mum and dad rode bikes from the age 5-6 years old. It was just a family thing to go away and do, and I'm now doing that with my kids, and basically it's just going to be the same thing. I'm not pushing them to race, it's just to go and have fun and hang out and learn something and have that connection with your parents and your kids, and that's all what motorcycling is all about. I think it's a family thing, and that's what I like to try to push.
Two times world champion Australian Troy Corsa, a legend of the sport, and it's a great privilege to talk to you today, and thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
No worries.
Okay, this is Phil Hall at Phillip Island at the World Superbikes for MotoPod, the internet podcast, and I'm talking to South African rider Sheridan Marais. Sheridan, welcome to Australia and Phillip Island. Is this your first visit here?
Yeah, I've been to Australia before. I came and did a round at Eastern Creek in 2004, but this is my first time at Phillip Island, so yeah, good track.
You must have been pretty young in 2004.
Yeah, I was probably about 18, 17, somewhere around there anyway. And yeah, it was good. Good coming to, I raced in the Australian Championship for, I think it was then, probably Nikon Yamaha, and I did just a wild card round. And yeah, it was good. I spent a bit of time in South Africa. The weather's pretty similar, I mean, in Australia, it's pretty similar to South Africa, same time of the year.
Yes.
So, yeah, I like the place, it's good.
And just give us a quick sort of précis of your career and how you happened to land in as the first South African rider in World Superbikes.
Yeah. Well, I'd been, obviously, for the past 10 years, I've been trying to get overseas, and in South Africa, I'd won quite a few championships for Kawasaki, and with the relationship built up there, we started building a relationship with Kawasaki in Europe and in the World Championship, and that's pretty much where this came from. You know, I'm really lucky to have this ride at the moment. Things are tough worldwide at the moment, so I am really lucky to have the ride, and I appreciate it, but I have worked really hard for it, and you know, I've built big, good, solid relationships in the world scene, as well as at home. You know, I've got a lot of support at home and from Kawasaki, South Africa. The guys really do help a lot, and yeah, like I said, it's to those guys that I've got the ride here today.
Well, that's really good to hear, because we, in many respects, Australia and South Africa are similar, not just in a matter of climate, but
yes,
in terms of our distance from the centre of where road racing is happening in Europe, and it's very hard for riders from the colonies, so to speak, to break into the scene in Europe.
Yes. No, like I said, for 10 years I've been doing the odd wild card. I've been getting where I can. Last year I did the Super Stocks for Team Lorenzini Kawasaki, and that was my first go at a full championship and with everything behind me. And this being the second year in a world championship class, you know, with the Super Sport 600s. So, yeah, it is tough, but, I mean, you just got to keep grinding at it, and that's when things happen now.
Obviously the Kawasaki that you're riding now, you're pretty familiar with the mark, you're pretty familiar with the way that Kawasaki's work. Well, it would be
quite a deal different from the Superstock bike, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a bit different to the Superstock bike in the sense that it obviously doesn't make that sort of horsepower, but it handles like a dream. It's so fast around the turns. That's what takes time getting used to. But nonetheless, we've done a lot of testing. The team have put in a good effort with testing and that, and I think we're up to pace. I think there's a lot of fast Kawasaki's out there. The good thing is the bike's been out since, I think, 2008, and it's been a race winner since then. So, yeah, the bike's definitely capable of doing the job. It's just a matter of putting the package together. Yeah.
Electronics would be different also from what you've been used to in Superstock.
Yeah.
A lot more reliance on that.
Yeah, Superstock, it's more of like a standard thing. You know, you sort of, that's your setup, and you sort of use that for the year, whereas, yeah, obviously you can work on it from session to session, lap to lap sort of thing.
I've been interested to ask quite a few of the riders. You know, in my day when I started following racing, there was no electronics at all, and the mechanic knew how to set up the bike from what the rider told him when he came in off the track. Now the mechanic has to work from two things. He has to work from the input that you give him, but he also has to look at what's coming off the computer as well. Does that make it more difficult?
Well, I don't know, to be honest. I don't know. It helps a hell of a lot, but to be honest, it's still the same thing. Like, I talk to the mechanic, and we sort of go by my feel, and just to confirm, like, if we are lost, or just to confirm what I'm saying, then we look on the telemetry and see. But I'm more use it, like, at the moment, obviously, Keenan's a bit ahead of me, and when I want to do a lap time, I just go look at what he's doing differently to me, especially at now, like, a new circuit. Keenan was quite a bit faster than me, so I just overlay and see what's happening differently. So it helps in that sense, but maybe once I learn a little bit more about it, I'll be using it more. But at the moment, I'm just talking with my guys and going forward that way. Yeah.
I'm tickled that you mentioned Keenan, actually, because I was going to ask you, is it an advantage to you to have a 2-time world champion as your teammate?
Well, at the moment, yes. Like I say, I haven't been here before, and you know, just getting onto the pace and that, you know, I just hop on behind him if he goes out for a fast lap or so. And like I say, on the telemetry, I can overlay. I mean, there's no wall in our pits or anything like that. So
I noticed that.
We work together, and he's a friendly guy. The whole team gets along. He's mechanics, my mechanics. It's like a big family. So, yeah, like I say, it is definitely a help, especially when I go to the tracks that I don't know and I haven't been around on the Supersport bike.
How many tracks are you going to encounter this year that will be a first time for you?
Yeah, it's only this one and then Moscow, but I think Moscow's new for everyone.
Well, that'll be the same for everyone.
Yeah, that's right. So it's pretty much only here.
Mm. I've been interested to find out from other riders what their take is on the flyaway rounds, where you're a long way away from home base. I know that you get a shipping container comes out here with, you know, four lots of everything that you need, but it still must be more difficult to be racing this far away from home base than it would be if you were racing, say, in Europe, where the team has all of its resources.
Yeah, it does. It's just a few little complications, like, you know, it's just like the eating and that sort of thing, and just going to relax. Luckily now we've got this room that we're sitting in, but it's just small things like that. And then obviously the jet lag plays a big role, because that killed me when I came over here.
Yep.
But yeah, if you can plan it a week ahead of what you normally would, then I think it's not too bad, actually.
I'm looking at you. You're obviously the right size for a 600 Supersport rider. You would be, you know, very able to wrap yourself around those little bikes well.
Yeah. I like the 600. Not to say I don't like the thousands at all, but I mean, I do like the 600. I feel like I can wring its neck, sort of thing. But yeah, it is fun. But like I say, the 1000 is just as much fun, and I enjoy it just as much. So, but it definitely is an advantage being a small guy, because it's a lot easier for me to get down to 59, 60 kilos, whereas the bigger guys do struggle to do that. But it has its advantages. You know, there's pros and cons to everything. Like, if you're a bigger guy, you have a bit more leverage. So yeah. there's pros and cons. Like, I'll be fast down the straight, that's for sure. Yeah.
And what's the goal, Sheridan? World Superbikes?
Yeah, this paddock for me is a really good paddock. Like, everyone talks about GP and whatever, but I mean, I've got a good thing going over here, and I get along with my team and all the guys in the paddock really well. So yeah, I'd like to stay in this paddock. Supersport, I've always wanted to ride Supersport and win that, so that's the goal at the moment. I'm not thinking anywhere ahead of that. So so that's the plan. So for now, that's what I'm thinking about. But yeah, further goal would be the Superbike for sure.
Right, okay. And do you have any sort of lead up things for that at the moment, or are you just focused on the Supersport?
Just doing the job on the Supersport, yeah. That's the focus at the moment.
It fascinates me going up and down the pits listening, because it's like a United Nations out there. You know, you actually start notice if you actually hear somebody speaking English, because it's Italian and Spanish and, you know, all the French and all this. And, you know, how do you get on with that?
No, it's all good, eh? Like I said, this paddock's really friendly, so all the guys get along really well. You've got one or two guys that are just a bit to themselves, a bit quiet, but I mean, each man to his own. But like I say, everyone else is friends. Like, all of us get along well, and yeah, it's a good paddock.
Outside the track?
Outside the track, it seems to be the same thing. Like, the guys tend to do things together. Like, the guys, all the guys that cycle and that want to sort of do it together and that, but just depends. Like, last year, I didn't really base myself in Europe. I used to just fly back and forth from South Africa. But this year I'll be basing myself near where the team stays. And yeah,
where's that?
That's in Pegonaga in Italy.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, looking forward to that. I think it'll make things a bit easier as well.
I've been getting the same sort of feedback from a lot of the European riders who say that one of the things they love about coming out here is that they get to have the lovely weather instead of freezing their tails off in minus 10 degrees in Europe, which is what it's like at the moment.
Well, yeah, it is really cold in Europe at the moment, but their summer's pretty much like this. It's really, really, really warm there. So I suppose I'll have the best of both worlds. I'll be somewhere in South Africa and somewhere in Europe, so it's the best place to be.
And, of course, this is a great place to do your development, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah, definitely. Because, obviously, with the good weather, when you go testing in Europe, it's so cold, you only get to do 3 hours a day of testing. So if you go for a two-day test, you only get 6 hours of track time sort of thing.
Yep.
Whereas over here, the weather's great, so you can ride all day long.
And Phillip Island itself, what do you like about Phillip Island? What's sort of your impression of the track?
In the track itself is really, really good. It reminds me a lot of the tracks in South Africa. It's a bit bumpy and blind, that sort of thing, really fast. So it's very similar to the tracks at home, but it's hell of a hard to learn. But I mean, it's a track at the end of the day. You've got to learn all of them. So,
yep.
But it is a special place, definitely. It's not a place I'll forget, but yeah, I like it.
Is tipping it into turn one with the bike cranked over, you know, on full noise, is that a daunting thing to start with?
To be honest, like I say, the tracks at home are very similar. Like, all of the seven tracks that we have at home, all of them have a fast turn. It's similar sort of thing. So it's not too bad for me. It is fast, don't get me wrong. Like, I don't want to crash in there, that's for sure. But yeah, like I say, I like the fast turns. Yeah.
Sharon, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you and to get your take on what's going on out there. And I'm sure, you know, our listeners are going to be delighted to hear the sort of feedback that you're giving. We wish you all the best for the meeting today and for the rest of the season, and hope it all goes well for you. And I want to thank you very much for sparing us the time today.
Oh, thank you guys very much for the opportunity. Yeah, it's good.
Okay, World Superbikes at Phillip Island, Australia. This is Phil Hall reporting again for MotoPodcast.com, and I've got leading World Supersport competitor and all-round good guy Aussie Brock Parks with me at the moment. Brock, first, welcome back to Australia. You spend most of your time overseas these days. It must be great to come back.
Yeah, it's been interesting, actually, off-season for me. You know, normally I'm staying in Europe and between Europe and Australia, but this year I seem to have quite a bit of time on my hands. I stayed here in Australia for 3 months, so I've had a pretty good break back with the family. It's been really good. Normally I'd come back here for probably a month maximum and I'd be back to Europe testing, but this year I didn't have a ride up until about 3 weeks before this race here at Phillip Island, so I was, you know, sort of just playing with my fingers, hoping the dream ride would come true, and in the end it has come true. So here I am on the 10K Honda, and we had a couple of days test the other day. It was really good. The bike was pretty much straight away on the pace and myself, and you know, I like Phillip Island. We missed a win here last year by 9,000, so you know, it's a good track for me, and you know, the Honda seems to work really good here. We topped the timesheets today in final qualifying, and actually this morning as well. So it's really close at the top end. There's three of us within 3,000. But, you know, it's been 8 years since I rode for 10K. Last time I rode for them was back in 2004. And I just, you know, I feel quite at home actually working with the guys. We're only a small team. There's only three guys in my box, and we seem to be working quite well at the moment. And you know, just hopefully we can keep up the pace that we've got and look at this year. Looking to, you know, try and win that championship that I haven't won yet. We always, you know, dream to be a world champion, and that's my dream. So I'm still chasing my dream, and yeah, basically that's where I'm at the moment.
And Ten Carter is the dream team, isn't it?
Yeah, I reckon Ten Kate, you know, is a dream team. If you have a look at the final results over, you know, the last 10 years or whatever, I think they've won like 7 or whatever times. So they're definitely the dream team to be with. And this year looks really cool in the colours. We've got like the old sort of dream team Honda colours. So
that looks good.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. I was really excited when I seen the bike because they didn't have a sponsor, so they just decided to run the bike in the same colours as the Superbike team. And, you know, they're running the 20th anniversary Honda colours. So that came out really nice. You know, Tenkate are doing all the funding at the moment. They're, you know, they're putting all their own money in to be here on the grid, and that's a big effort from Garrett and from Ronald. And, you know, I'm just really thankful that they're taking me on, because at this time and with a recession in Europe and Japan, it's not easy to have a ride. And you know, I can't get the personal backing from Australia, and I feel I'm the only Aussie that unfortunately the only Aussie that can be a chance to be a world champion.
Realistic chance.
That's right, you know, like the Superbike guys, there's a few Aussies there, but you know, I've been down that road with bikes like that, and you're just making up the numbers, unfortunately. But you know, you're still here, and at the moment, if you're still here, and I think that's a bonus. You know, you spend 1 year out of the World Championship, it's really hard to come back, because you just lose that little bit, and it takes another year to try and get that back.
And there's a bunch of fast guys rushing in to take your place.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, a lot of young fast kids coming through, a lot of money that can have a lot of money behind them to go to a team, which is unfortunate the way that things are at the moment, that a lot of rides are brought, and it's heading in that direction. I really don't like it. I do believe that if you put your life on the line and you're really good at something, you should get paid to do it. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, it can change around again, but it's not going to happen in a hurry. I was lucky that financially I was okay, that I could continue to race on a much, much smaller wage, and you know, here I am today, and I'm still here, so I'm very thankful for that.
Brock, no pressure here, but, you know, Sebastian Carpentier, Kenan Sofoglu, they're big shoes to fill, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, they're good. They're very good riders, you know. They both won a couple of times with Tenkate, so, you know, they're in a good position, and Kenan's back again this year, and basically sort of, no, kind of on my old team or my old bike, you know, from last year with a few improvements. So, you know, it's sort of, you know, he's got to prove that they can put that bike up there. They want to win. We want to win. I've got to fill their boots. So there is a bit of pressure, but, you know, it's good pressure because, you know, they know they've done it before and I haven't yet. So I just hope that they can bring me that extra step to win one.
And Supersport being such a fiercely competitive class, you know, you need that pressure to keep the edge, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm 30 now, so I'm sort of an older guy in the Supersport. Yeah, I'm getting on a bit. So it's always, you know, I'm getting old, but I'm just sitting here watching the Superbike and seeing Carlos Checa and Max Biaggi on top, and they're both 40, so there's still life in me, I'm sure. But
Well, I remember 15 years ago watching you racing Little Moriwaki 80 around Wakefield Park in the junior category, and Christopher Mullen was there that day, and Anthony West and a few others who've gone on and done well as well. And I remember seeing you. I commentated that meeting. I remember seeing and thinking that guy's going to go places. And you know, I've been watching your career, and you're going places.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, that's true. That was 15 years ago. It was my first ride ever on a road bike, or first race. And yeah, we had a little good little battle between me and Anthony West, I think, from memory. And yeah, it's, you know, I've had a pretty good career. I'm still yet to win a world championship, but I've been runner up quite a few times. So yeah, it's at the moment, you know, I always just looking to get that number one plate, you know, that'd be really nice in Supersport. And then, you know, my goal is always to get back to Superbike, but until I can have a competitive bike, I'm happy to be here.
Now, the important question is, if you did, let's hope you do, win the Supersport Championship, would you run number one or still run number 23?
I definitely run number one. I feel, you know, 23 has always been my number, and I've got it tattooed on me and stuff like that. But you know, I just did that when I was a bit younger and a bit silly, to be honest. But if I was number one, I'd definitely run number one. I feel that if you've earned the one plate, you should run it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm wholeheartedly in favour of, you know, the champion wearing number one, regardless of what their favourite number is. Brock, you've run Yamaha and Kawasaki and Honda in Supersport, admittedly over a certain period of time. What's the difference between the bikes?
Yeah, you know, there's quite a bit of difference in the bikes. You know, year to year they change quite a bit. You know, in racing, you know, the bikes can be changed quite a bit, and I think that a lot comes from team. You know, it's more to do these days because the bikes are so close with the guys working around you, and you got to have a bike over a season. But they all have their good and their faults. But, you know, one thing I really have enjoyed about the CBR is that it seems to do everything quite good. And, you know, I've only really rode it at two tracks. But you can change a bike quite a bit and you still have good lap time. So that's what I'm finding at the moment, that the bike's a pretty neutral bike and quite easy to go fast on quite quick. So, you know, for a punter or someone doing track days and on the street, that's a good bike.
The march of technology, Brock, things like electronics, traction control and all that sort of stuff, you've probably seen most of that in the time that you've been racing in Supersport. What impact does that have?
You know, it's quite a big thing in Supersport now. There's a lot more electronics and stuff, you know, for traction control. Fortunately, we don't need as much as a Superbike because the bikes don't have near as much horsepower, but you know, I got to say that the bikes, they have to have a good system, and in the end, it comes down to the guys that are working the system. If they know what they're doing, it makes a big difference. But I think I learned a lot when I went to Superbike for a couple of years, and then come back to Supersport. I felt that I learned a lot there, and I could bring that back and give it to teams in Supersport. And even these last couple of days, we've been working a lot on that, on the electronic side on this bike.
Do you know what sort of horsepower your bike is pulling?
To be honest, I wouldn't really know, but I'm thinking 145, something like that. That's my guess.
Out of a 600?
Yeah.
It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of power, you know, when you think about, wasn't that many years ago and I had that sort of horsepower out of 750 Superbikes. So, you know, it's even 1,000 Superbikes. When I rode a Ducati, I think my Ducati had that sort of power back in 2001, so no, it's a lot of power out of a little 600, and, you know, lap time-wise, when you look at the lap times on some of the tracks, we're not that far off either.
On the shorter tracks, there's not much to choose, is there?
No, that's right. The Superbikes can't use the horsepower, and, you know, we can use all the horsepower and a little bit more, always ringing the little 600's neck and getting the most out of it. So even, you know, they're on slicks and their bikes are lighter, but the lap times are so close. You know, even here at Phillip Island's quite a big track, and I think they're only like probably about 3 seconds different. So, you know, it's quite good.
How good are modern Supersport tyres?
Yeah, the Supersport tyres are pretty good, you know. The good thing is that we're all on exactly the same rubber, you know. Pirelli, you know, support the championship. And I think that's a good thing in a way because then we know what, you know, there's no like 1 second in a Dunlop or a Bridgestone or a Michelin or something like that. So you roll up, everyone's got the same, and, you know, the tyres have come a long way. We work every year, you know, to make the tyres better. This is probably the worst track for the Pirelli for the whole championship with the rear tyre, trying to get it to go the distance. But overall, every other track, we don't ever seem to have any problems.
Would you have thought there would be a time where it would be hard to make a 600 Supersport tyre go the distance in a race? You would normally think that, you know, that you could do that easily, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you know, you think that they would be able to, I guess, but, you know, Phillip Island's a, you know, a bit unique where you're always on the side of the tyre, and we always want faster lap times, so they're bringing softer tyres and those tyres maybe not working in the race, but yeah, you know, that's something that they're working on, and you know, it's been a bit of a problem for, you know, quite a few years now. So you know, it's something that it's not so easy to fix, but let's see what they come up with for Sunday, and hopefully we can, you know, have a tyre that will go the distance.
I'm getting some complaints from some of the riders that the track is very rough compared to what it was last year.
Yeah, I guess there is a couple more. There's a couple more bumps, but I don't seem to feel them as much this year. But I don't know if that's my bike or not.
Brock, it's been a great pleasure talking to you, and you know, renewing the acquaintance after such a long time. We've followed your career, and you know, always been interested in seeing how you're going. I'm tickled to death that you're with a Honda team. I probably shouldn't say that because I'm a Honda man, you know, first, last, and foremost. But absolutely tickled to see you with 10K, because you know, they've always been one of my favourite teams, and it's great to have you here. It's great to see you up at the pointy end right from the get go. That augurs well for the rest of the season.
Ah, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to spend the time with you. And, yeah, you know, I've always been a bit of a Honda man myself when I was a bit younger. So I'm always, I don't know, seeing myself for some reason on a Honda. And I'm really enjoying it. A great team. And, yeah, let's see what we can do in 2012.
Possibly, hopefully, fingers crossed, the world champion-elect in Supersport for 2012, Australia's Brock Parks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right, this is Phil Hall again reporting from Phillip Island for MotoPod, and I'm down in the pro race pit at the moment talking to Lucas Peszek. Lucas, welcome to Australia. This isn't your first trip. You've been here with the Grand Prix teams, haven't you?
Yeah, I was here like 2004 first time, and I was here a couple of years with MotoGP, but this is the first time with the World Superbike Series for me here.
And you, like most riders, you obviously love the track.
Yeah, I love it, because anyway, in 2007 I won here with 125, so I have really good memories.
Yes, indeed, and you're keeping the number 52, which is good also.
Yeah, I have that number from since I think 2003, so I use them.
Lucas, there's obviously huge differences between riding a Grand Prix bike and riding one of these. How are you adapting?
You know, the biggest difference on that bike is that the frame is softer, so the bike is moving a lot, much more to the GP bikes. And anyway, last year I didn't race so much, so for me it's like a comeback to the World Championship, and I really enjoy it.
Do you enjoy the traveling?
Yeah, I was missing last year the traveling, so this year is quite okay.
Yeah, and of course it can't do any harm coming out here to Australia where the weather is like this instead of freezing cold like it is in Europe.
Yeah, for example, this winter in Czech is quite cold, because there was like minus 20 degrees, so here is plus 30. So yeah, I like it. It's a little bit too much, but anyway, better than cold.
Lucas, what's the difference in this bike? You said the frame is softer and it moves around a lot more. Things like electronics, tyres and things like that?
Yeah, the tyres, Pirelli, they are really strange, because with Dunlop tyres I have a lot of experience, but for me it's the first year with Pirelli. And yeah, I don't know how they work in this moment, so I need to do one race and then I understand a little bit more. But I think that's the biggest difference, the tyres.
Yep. And that does take a while to get used to, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course we have to use them, but yeah, they are like that. And, you know, first we have to test it and then we know it.
What about the power difference between what you're used to riding and this?
Well, that's the four stroke. I used to ride mostly the two strokes, so this I have to learn also. I don't like four stroke yet, but I think if I do a couple of races, it's becoming better.
Okay, Lucas, we better leave it, because they're going to annoy us for the next 10 laps. So thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dale. Goodbye.
Well, this is Phil Hall for MotoPodcast.com from the World Superbike round at Phillip Island here in Australia, and talking to one of the Australian riders, Mark Acheson, racing for the Team Galini team. Mark, I guess welcome back to Australia. You haven't really had a chance to try this bike out yet.
No, not really. I mean, we've had 2 days on the bike at the beginning of this week, but that's really just a shakedown to make sure everything runs right and and works in the right area, so everything rolls well and is developing well. But to be honest, at the moment, 2 days is not enough for me to get comfortable. So we've got the rest of the weekend, and each time we need to improve and understand the bike a little bit further. But at the end of the day, we're only on 2 days testing. So to jump into a World Superbike weekend with 2 days testing on a brand new bike is almost unheard of. But we're here, and we're still looking forward, and we're looking positive and optimistic about the year ahead. You know, we're not too concerned about this weekend because we know that it's not really in our foreseeable sort of results measure, you could say, and we just need to crack on for the rest of the season now.
How different is it to what you've ridden before?
Yeah, quite different actually. Well, last year I was on the Kawasaki, and it was a new project for me, and first time in Superbike, so that was a brand new experience, and I had to learn a lot in a short space of time with not a lot of testing again. So it's a different bike. You know, the main points for me, it's a different team and a different bunch of people, which means that you've got to start the process a little bit again. So it's an evolution, and but that's part of the challenge. That's part of my, you know, the motivation to go racing is to get from one point to the next, and then, you know, as a team you work together to achieve the goals that you hope to achieve. So, you know, I know when it all comes together, it'll be satisfying for me, not only, but for the boys as well. You know, they'll be quite content about how the position goes and how the bike is working, and we'll see. You know, it's early days. We'll see how things go along.
I've just been standing back watching you talking to some of the team members and stuff like that. You have a grip of the language, which means that you can communicate in their language as well as in English, and that must surely be a help.
Yeah, well, it's a necessity at the moment because I've got one guy who speaks a little bit of English, but it's broken at best. So we do speak in Italian, and I try and make my best effort to do that because then at least everyone's on the same page. So it means we can all work together.
And they're a good bunch of guys?
Yeah, you know, so far I've had a lot of fun. You know, I went to spend some time with them in Bologna a few weeks ago, and, you know, we spent 4 or 5 days there, and that was good, and now we're just here, and they've been under the pump this week, and so they've been a little bit stressed, but I think the good weather and the good atmosphere in Phillip Island has made the environment lighter, and that's helped.
And everybody loves coming to Phillip Island, don't they?
Yeah, well, the guys, for a lot of them, for 4 or 5, you know, of my team crew, it's their first time in Australia. So, that's quite good for them. They get to travel and see different parts of, you know, for them it's -5 degrees and snowing in Italy. So it's always good to escape that weather, you know, and they get out of their norm and, you know, get into some sunshine and, you know, brightens the mood.
I always think these meetings are an excuse for the guys from Europe to escape from the European winter and come out here and get some sunshine.
Well, you know, at least it's good for me. I've been in the UK for a couple of months and it's been quite cold, and well, not too bad, but it's good to come back and see family, and for them it's a good opportunity to the same thing, you know, they get to come out and experience something different culture, and start of the season, it's a long year ahead, and yeah.
Realistic goal for 2012?
Goals, I've got a few things that I want to tick off on my list this year, and one of those is getting back inside the top 10 toward, you know, I hope from mid-year on, once we can put ourselves in a good position, gain some rhythm and momentum, then I can really start to, you know, put myself further up into that area, and then hopefully make some consistency from it.
Is it an advantage for you to be in a one-bike team?
I believe so. You know, sometimes it's got good and bad points because you've got, you know, a lot of focuses on you, but then sometimes you don't have a lot of data available from one rider, so that makes it hard. But I like the one, you know, being in my own and my own little crew here, and it's, you know, everyone's around surrounding working for me, I guess. So they're putting all their support behind me, and that's, you know, that's, I guess, that's something that they wanted to do. They're looking at one rider project, and, you know, I enjoy both sides of the situation, actually. So, yeah, I don't really know the answer to that straight away, but we'll see how that sort of pans out with this team later on in the year.
Well, Mark, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I'm going to let you go. I've got a lot of other questions I'd like to ask you, but I know that you're flat out. This is Thursday, and everybody has their race face on, you know, right now, and have since this morning, so I understand that you're very busy. Thank you so much for your time, and all the best for the weekend.
All right, thank you.
All right, well, I'm talking to Carlo Theorani, who is the team manager for the Honda World Superbike team, and I thought it would be interesting to talk to somebody other than a rider and find out a little bit about what happens behind the scenes. So, needle's bouncing around enough. Yes, it is. So we should be right with that. That'd be real. So, Carlo, welcome to Australia. I have never met you before, so I have to ask you, how many times have you been here before?
Many times, because I'm working from Honda from 88.
Wow.
And before Superbike, I was team manager of the HRC team with Valentino Rossi. And later with Piaggi. In 2006, I moved from MotoGP to Superbike. I work for Honda Motor Europe, that is our head office in Europe. And we are located in London, and we are responsible for this project of Superbike. We run this project starting from 2006 through our satellite team, Tenkate, a Dutch team. We won one world championship in Superbike with James Tosanand in 2007. And we won many titles, eight,
yes,
in the World Supersport.
Sebastian Carpentier and Kenan Sofoglu, of course.
Yes.
Yes.
So our team is quite experienced. They have a lot of experience. And, of course, for Honda Motor Europe, the project of Superbike is very important because it's linked with production and linked with the customer, with the clients.
Sure. And the old saying is... win on Sunday, sell on Monday.
Yes. Even this was Enzo Ferrari's sentence. That is okay. Work also in for motorcycle.
Yes, of course it does. And of course, in this case, with production-based motorcycles, even more so than things like MotoGP, where there isn't as strong a connection between the MotoGP bike and the bike that a customer can buy from his local Honda dealer.
Yeah, exactly. As you can see here Phillip Island is amazing. How many motorcycles, how many people is coming here riding their motorcycle. So it's great. I think it's, and they, for them, I think it's a great proud to see their motorcycle racing on the circuit. So it's absolutely good for us.
How hard is it to do the flyaway rounds, like here in Australia, where you're so far away from your base?
Yeah, the organization is quite... well done, because we bring all our stuff, including motorcycle equipment, in a crate. We bring in Brussels, and in Brussels, everybody collect the stuff, and the organization in Front Motorsport have a charter, and they bring the stuff in here in Australia. So when we fly at the circuit, we find the crate inside the garage. At the end of the race, we package everything. We put outside the garage our crates, and they collect, and they put again, they have again another charter, and they send back everything in Brussels. And in 1 week, our trucks go in the headquarters.
To the airport of Brussels.
The airport, and they take back at home all the crates with all motorcycle and machines. So it's a quite expensive exercise, yeah. But it's work well.
But very efficient.
Yes, definitely yes.
Your two riders have been riding very well this weekend. Johnny's been right up near the top of the time charts all the time, but he's had a couple of accidents as well. So, yeah, does that put extra pressure on your team?
Yes, of course, also because now this is the first 2012 season start with new rules. So basically now we have only one machine. So if the rider crash, we have to fix the machine.
Oh,
of course,
right,
this is an extra pressure, because when Jonathan crashed yesterday, and sorry, Aoyama crashed yesterday, and Jonathan today.
This morning, yes.
This morning, the team have to make an extra effort to rebuild or to refix the bike in a few minutes.
Very short space of time.
Short space, yes. We were lucky. Because honestly, the bike was not so bad, so we just we lost about 12 minutes this morning with Jonathan and 15 yesterday with Hiroshi.
Right.
We agreed the new rules, because of course we can save some money. Now the teams can buy only one motorcycle, and also we think that the team is more involved. So if you are a good mechanic, you can build, you are fast, you can give a boost to your in case of accident, you can make the difference.
I was actually watching your mechanics working on Johnny's bike when they brought it in off the track this morning, and I've seen it lots of times before, but it never ceases to amaze me how well they work under pressure. They really earn their money, don't they?
Absolutely, yes. And we have also, this team had some experience in endurance, so we are using here for the first time some endurance equipment, like fast system to disconnect the braking line.
Yes.
Many small trick to be more faster to fix the bike.
Right, and of course in endurance racing that's very important, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because you have to, during the pit stop, you have to change wheels, brakes in a few seconds, so it's definitely is crucial. The speed is crucial.
I'm a big fan of endurance racing, so I follow it very closely, so I understand what you're talking about there. And that's really good, because I just look at the way the guys work. They always pick up the right spanner. They always have the right end of the spanner. You know, they put the things down back in order where they should be, and you know, it just works so well. You know, do they practice?
Yes, of course. Yeah, we did a practice, and today, yesterday, and today for the first time they do in live for right.
Carlo, how is Hiroshi fitting in with the team? Of course, he's a very experienced rider. He's a 250cc world champion. But this is a very different sort of a bike to what he's been used to riding. How's he going?
Hiroshi is a very fast rider, and of course this is he tests the bike only twice before to be here, so need some time to understand the bike.
Yeah.
This morning already he did a good job. I think in a couple of races he will be very, very competitive, because his style is a very well matched with a superbike style. He's a brave rider, he's a fast,
yes.
And he's very, very sensible to set up the bike. So definitely I'm confident that he can do a good job.
And coming from the Grand Prix side, he would understand a lot more about the electronics of the bike as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. In fact, he's very good to talk with our electronic guys. He will understand how to set up the bike, so this kind of stuff. So we don't need to train him on electronics, definitely.
No. And just, you know, you can tell me to mind my own business here, but, you know, do you have any pressure from Honda to employ a Japanese rider?
No. It was our choice, because Hiroshi was, you know, he had no seat in MotoGP. So as we hear this news, I say, come on, Hiro is bloody fast,
yep.
And it's a pity to
waste his talent.
Exactly. So we contacted directly him and his manager, and we did the deal.
Wow.
So it was, and I'm absolutely confident that we can do a very good job together.
So you actually have probably in terms of a team, you probably have a team where you have two equally fast and talented riders in the one team.
Yeah, absolutely. Also because Jonathan, last year when we talked with him and we were taking a decision about the second rider, we asked him to Jonathan, do you have any preference? And he said, yeah, I would like to have a fast teammate.
Yes.
So we choose
because it fires him up. And it also means that all the testing data that you get helps both riders, because both riders are riding the bike as hard as they can.
Yes, definitely, yes. Exactly.
That's good. Well, look, thank you so much for your time, Carlo. I really appreciate it.
Welcome.
Busy, but it's really interesting to look behind the scenes and see how it's going. And, you know, all the best for this weekend.
Thank you.
If both the riders have crashed, that means that they're pushing really, really hard. So, you know, in the race, it's probably going to be really good.
Yes, I hope so. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlo, thank you very much.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your time.
Thanks.
All right, massive thanks to Phil for gathering all those. And Phil, you've done such a good job that should you want to, we will bring you back for MotoGP at Phillip Island.
Absolutely.
Just brilliant. A little bit working a MotoGP round is a little and a lot different than working a World Superbike round. Not as open as a paddock, and things have to be more prearranged. But Phil did a brilliant job when he was down there, and we certainly, and you listeners out there, appreciate it. I think he kicked ass.
Totally, absolutely, yeah. And obviously, a very experienced and natural interviewer.
Yep. What else we got going on? A little bit of BSB news?
Yeah, well, in BSB, guys are going out testing. There's a bunch of them, Shaky Byrne and a bunch of others, heading out to Spain this week. But it was great to see John Laverty, Eugene, and Michael's brother back in the saddle testing alongside his teammate Florian Marino at Alton Park, which is John's first official ride since he suffered horrendous injuries at Alton Park last summer. I remember, I mean, the list of injuries was just, it was like a career's worth in one accident.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, was in free practice. And so he's back on the bike. Really good to see. And fingers crossed he will have an injury-free season and continue his recovery. So, but I thought to go back to the same circuit, that is a bit of fall off the horse, climb back, straight back on, you know.
Martin, trust me, I know that.
Yeah.
I know that. I've got corners at certain tracks that I approach with trepidation.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I have very, very limited experience of that, but at some stage I will have to go back to Anglesey and see if I can master that little home straight that I fell off at 2 years ago.
Well, you know, the more often you fall off, the more you kind of get used to it.
Yeah. Become immune to bruises eventually.
No, you never do. For Florian, I've got Florian Marino on my BSB fantasy team. I think he may be our dark horse.
Well, in that other little offshoot,
you bastard.
Yeah, the fantasy riders thing. I've got quite an interesting rider who's in BSB this year with the Saudi Falcons team. It is Abdulaziz Bin Laden.
Careful. Stay politically correct.
I'm thinking going to. I'm absolutely serious. And he is the cousin or second cousin of Osama Bin Laden, because they're a very, very large Saudi family, very well connected. Osama obviously went a little bit off the rails and, you know, became the world's probably most wanted terrorist ever. But no, he's going to be riding in BSB, which made people think, and how used to rain and hills will he be, or elevation changes? But no, he's quite cheap, so I've chucked him in just to see how the boy gets on.
So you're saying Josh Brooks is no longer the biggest threat?
I suspect he might be a rolling roadblock at a couple of the early rounds, this fella. But he won the UAE Super Sport Championship. He came second in the Super Sport Championship, I think. So, well, he might be Superbikes, but Arabian Peninsula series. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on.
We're really bad, aren't we?
No, but it's totally true. I mean, it's only true. People will think that's a wind-up, but seriously, check it out. Abdulaziz Bin Laden, and he's a 31, 32-year-old Saudi, and he'll be running in BSB this year.
Cool. I had a chat just before the show with Brett McCormick, who's running in Superstock 1000 this year, and he's got some very, very cool news, and we'll be talking to him probably over the weekend about that. Currently running the 1199 Panigale and did some testing down at PI, and I'm just going to leave you guys with that teaser. Stoked for him. And wow, brilliant
I
show.
Think we're done. Yeah,
I think we are. Like I said, figure you and I get to our part in about half an hour, 45 minutes. So everybody out there, thank you so much. I do want to ask, and I will ask this in a heartfelt way. if you guys can spare a few bucks for donations, we could desperately use them right now. Our hosting bills are getting very expensive. You can do it through the Facebook fan page at facebook.com/motopod or through the motopodcast.com website. We're trying to make ends meet and bring you all of this cool stuff. And if you guys can help us out, it would be vastly appreciated. You can also join us on the Facebook fan page and chat. I did a really cool little thing late last night. Identify this bike, and I think I'm going to keep doing that. You kind of show a – and I stole this idea from Alex Briggs. So, Alex of Factory Course. show a little detailed part or a big detailed part in high res and let people try and figure out what it is. It's a neat little game. And, Patrick, I owe you some stickers and I will get those off to you, forthwith. So with that, Martin, thanks a bunch for joining me. Look forward to seeing what Jules does mixing this thing up, and Absolutely. We will talk to you guys next week.
Cheers, Jim, and good night, all.
All right, cheers.
Good Lord, did someone just get shot in the background?
Yeah, I think it was a small child, actually.
You know, most of the BMW RS, the GS1200s and the 650s, the 850s they have now, you don't see these bikes on the road and actually expect people to take them off road. And some of the stuff you guys were showing us what to do with them was just incredible. There is.
I think the small child didn't like being shot.
Yeah, no, they do, apparently.
He's had his football taken away by his parents.
Oh, bless him.
He'll be in the elevator in a second and we can carry on.
No, it's nice.
What happened here live on air?
Oh, yeah. He's not one of your group, is he?
Yeah, we put him out early on off-road skills.
Absolutely.